Greetings and welcome to the Journal of Southern Religion podcast. My name is Art Remillard. I'm the book review editor for the JSR, and I teach at St. Francis University in Loretto, Pennsylvania. Today's podcast originates from Greenville, South Carolina, at the Southeast Regional Meeting of the American Academy of Religion. Among the many highlights of this year's event is a panel review of Charles Regan Wilson's newest book, Flashes of a Southern Spirit, Meanings of the Spirit in the U.S. South. Professor Wilson joins us today to discuss the book. He is the Kelly Jean Cook Senior Chair in History and Southern Studies at the University of Mississippi. Joining us also are the panelists, Roger Payne, Chair of the Department of Religious Studies at UNC Asheville, and Anne Blue Wills, Associate Professor of Religion at Davidson College. Charles, I want to start with you because in your response, you described how after you got these essays together, you kind of had an epiphany about how this idea of the spirit is a cohesive thread in these essays. Would you mind talking about that?
The chapters of the book began as individual articles that I had published for different venues, for conference papers, collections of essays, journal articles. But I realized that this theme of Southern spirit was what was working through them in one way or another. Much of it comes out of religious studies and interest in religion, but not all. I came to see that the idea of spirit was very broad, and some topics like tradition and identity and culture, they involve matters of the spirit as well as other dimensions. And so it deals with a variety of kinds of material, literature, music, folk art, public policy in some ways, my own experiences as well. So the value of Southern spirit as a conceptual tool, as a theme, is that it could hold together all of this diversity of subject matter, kind of evidence that I had, and different approaches to the South.
I want to turn now to your reviewers because we had some really interesting insights, and I got to start with probably the most interesting insight of the night, which was, does flashes compare to camo underwear and fried squirrel brains?
Yeah, I think the thing that I was worried about, the way that the book was working on me, lure me into thinking about all the stereotypes of the South that I have grown up with, that are fun to laugh about, fried squirrel brains and the camo underwear, and trying to think about, as I was reading and as I was reflecting on the book, what's the protective hedge that is put between the reader and sliding over into those stereotypes? How do we manage to take the spirit seriously without binding the spirit to stereotypes? So that was kind of my fun way of thinking about that. And those two references come from two recent episodes of reality shows that I have happened to watch, just happened to be on the TV while I was in the room, where in one episode of, what's the show, Double Divas, one of the owners of this lingerie store in Atlanta is contemplating wearing the camouflage bra and panties when she goes with her new husband hunting. And the other owner is explaining to her that she can't, if she wants to wear those, that's fine, but she's still going to have to scent herself for the hunting experience, and she's resistant to that. And they play it for maximum effect, their accents and their affect, their body language, the way that they physically present themselves. Big earrings, lots of makeup, big boobs.
How does Loretta Lynn offer an entry point for thinking about a Southern spirit that negotiates this line between Southern distinctiveness and Southern stereotype?
I think that what she does, she's clearly in her music, she's self-taught. She is self-taught on a guitar that her husband bought her because he liked to hear her sing around the house that was full of children. So it's a very domestic, traditional arrangement that they have, and yet he presents her with this guitar that liberates both of them. And she sings about, you mentioned Roger, Honky Tonk. The song that kind of gets them going is the song Honky Tonk Girl. So she is singing about what she knows, or what she thinks she knows, what she kind of wishes she could be. And he believes in that enough to promote her. And then she starts to sing about, as her career develops, she starts singing about more and more transgressive things, but still in this honky-tonk mode. So I think, you know, part of it is her music, just the lyrics that are moving into new territory for country music, for females singing country music. Again, still this backdrop of honky-tonk music is the kind of friction that the flashes come from that can't be tamped down. And that's one reason why I think she's really a valuable example of something that cannot be captured and settled down.
What does Ruth and Billy Graham bring to it?
It's actually, for me, it's a much more complicated question. I think Billy, I just kept thinking of Billy as I was reading this book and thinking, I have their timeline in my head pretty intransigently. So I just kept kind of thinking, okay, where were Billy and Ruth right now? What were they doing? What was Billy doing about ropes that were set up to keep the blacks and the whites separate at his crusades that he insisted come down? What was he doing in featuring African-American music in the Crusades when it was not a fixture in white evangelicalism? I think he stands as a thread that complements a lot of what Professor Wilson talks about in his book. The moments that gave me a lot of anxiety as I was reading, especially the James Agee stuff about tenant farmers and their houses, and Ruth had this project to build their house when they moved up the mountain in Montreat. And it's a very interesting project, but she appropriated that house out of countless mountain cabins, some of which were not possessed by anybody and some of which she went after. And as I understand it, it was bricolage. You know, she was putting this together. I think that house is her masterpiece, but the way that AG would have seen that house is very different from the way that she saw that house and the way that I have grown accustomed to seeing that house as her masterpiece. He would have not been very happy about that house, I think, because he saw her as appropriating it, as taking that beauty, that unrecognized beauty, out of its own place and time and usage and making her own thing out of it. So I'm real conflicted about that, because I love her, and I'm grateful to that part of, I'm grateful for a lot of that book, but I'm especially grateful about that book, because that part of the book, because it helps me to think against her a little bit, which I think is important when we're writing biography, to not get so enamored of the subject that
becomes hagiography.
Yeah, because that, Lord knows, that's been done.
Let me turn to Roger Payne now. And Roger, you turned the discussion to Catholicism, which I think speaks to the flexibility of this term that Charles is identifying in this. And as I was listening to you talk, I kept thinking about a distinctive Catholicism within a distinctive South. And I'm wondering if you could talk about why you think the discussion needs to go in that direction.
My points about Catholicism have to do really with the way in which Dr. Wilson has approached any understanding of the South, and that is culturally, not so much simply geographically, in the sense that we might include Maryland in the South, Louisiana and the Mississippi Gulf Coast, where you have a historic Catholic presence. But my interest is not just in the demography of Southern Catholicism, but really the way in which Catholics have negotiated their place in this larger Southern culture using their religion and using what Andrew Greeley would have called their Catholic imagination, this idea of sort of seeing the world sacramentally, which is to say that the material world discloses to us something about the spiritual world. And I think that's something that probably most Southerners, Protestant, Catholic, or otherwise, would probably agree with to some extent. And so my interest is in asking the question then, how does this Catholic appropriation of this compare with that of the Protestant evangelicals, the African-American Protestants. Do Catholics bring us a new way of sort of looking at Southern culture? Of course, the principal Catholic figure that we've talked about a good bit is Flannery O'Connor, who does this so well. And it's very hard to break ourselves, to wean ourselves from O'Connor's works, and I would certainly never leave them behind totally, but I'm sure that there were other individuals who responded in similar sorts of ways that we simply haven't taken a good look at as scholars of Southern religion.
Tell us, what do Italian Catholics have to tell us about the spirit of the Catholic South?
It's a great question because there's been a lot of good work done recently on sort of a cross-cultural comparison between the American South and Southern Italy. Both are informed in many ways by the ways in which those to the north define them as a sort of degraded other in some way. They're both joined to some extent against their will with the larger nation, having been brought into a national community through some sort of war. Both have their own particular ways of addressing modernity, and I think that the ways in which they do this often expresses itself through their religious traditions. So when Southern Italians are processing an image of a saint or focusing on a rather bloody devotion of the person of Jesus or even the sorrow of Mary in some ways, these are certainly specifically Catholic ways of giving expression to a lot of the same ideas that Southern evangelical Protestants, I think, give expression to. Notions of suffering, notions of family, notions of redemption through suffering in some way. So even though the two religions, a sort of moralistic evangelical Protestantism and a very pietistic Italian Catholic devotionalism, appear to be poles apart, I think there's probably a lot of common ground there that we can explore.
Let me finish this conversation off with just asking Charles what he took away from the panelists and what it might maybe taught him about his own book.
I wrote in Flashes of the Southern Spirit that I hoped that it would be suggestive for future work to follow up on this concept of the Southern Spirit. I think that it is a way to get at some fundamental issues in terms of tensions in the South, the spirit. The South has been in some ways a status quo society with very strong tendencies toward order and taming the spirit. But at the same time, there have been other people in the South who have championed the idea of expressing the spirit, being inspired by the spirit, being creative through the spirit. I think from our panel that Roger's questions about what have been some of the traditional issues of the study of religion in the South, to what degree are they still going to form a basis for our work in the future, or do we need new issues, and to what degree, what are those new issues? And I think that's really a very important thing that came out of our everybody's comments tonight. And I think that some of the traditional issues of studying the South will continue to produce new studies and important insights, but we do need to define new issues. Catholicism that we talked about, I think that's definitely on the agenda. The religious groups that have not been traditionally found in the South that are now here, Buddhists, Muslims, Hindus, all of this should cause us to look at the changing religious context and the relationship of older patterns to newer patterns, the role of women, very important issue in terms of the agenda of work on religion in the South, this field of New Southern Studies that's trying to look at the South in transnational terms and globalization and all of that. I think looking at women's experiences in negotiating those kind of boundaries in families, in work, and in other aspects, and how does religion figure in that? And how can religion, the institutional support providing resources, and how can it be, in terms of belief systems and worldviews, how can it help negotiate all of the changes that people go through in all of these transnational moves and international relationships that we have in the South now?
Well, with that, let's wrap up this podcast. Our food just arrived, so we might as well, right? Again, the book is Flashes of a Southern Spirit, Meanings of the Spirit in the U.S. South. Thank you to Charles Regan Wilson, Roger Payne, and Blue Willis for joining us. We also thank you for joining us. Have a great day.